Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we will be reviewing Bad Boys for Life and Doolittle, plus a whole lot more. We've got a new game to introduce you to, as well as we're going to talk about what do we want from television in 2020, what we need from television in 2020. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How you doing today?
Wonderful. Amanda Sink?
Hello, hello.
Oh, you gave up in 1 week, huh?
I did. Well, there was no positive, like, enthusiastic responses for hey, hey, hey.
Well, everybody kind of said that they prefer the hello, hello. So
yeah, yeah. So that closed that up.
I find fascinating, John, is we did a whole hour and 40 minutes of podcast, and all anybody cared about was when's Hello Hello coming back? I didn't know it was a thing.
You know, I kind of read that as I'm not needed.
Me too. Coincidental. Bye, Amanda. We'll see you later.
No.
The helm's yours, madam.
Goodbye, goodbye.
That's mean.
No, we're done. Seriously, like that's the end of the show.
Yeah, it was nice talking to you on a weekly basis. I got things to do.
You got a format. Just, you know, have at it.
Just talk to myself.
I think you should do news roundup. That's what I think. Okay, you know what? Let's go right into the news roundup. Here it is. We haven't done this in a long time. I said ditch it. These two said bring it back. So here we go. If you don't want me to do it anymore, all you got to do is do the same thing you did with Hello, Hello and vote against it and say, ditch news. You guys don't need it. But these two say I do. So here you go. Ready?
That sounded so pathetic. Trying to get the listeners on your side about the news bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm working on. All right. Here's all the news that happened over the past week. You ready?
Ready.
Jack Reacher is kicking Tom Cruise to the curb and has received an official green light as an Amazon TV series. Speaking of, Amazon announced its cast for its Lord of the Rings series, which will be mostly unknowns, while also at the same time canceling The Dark Tower in the same week. Ouch to fantasy fans. Hank Azaria will no longer voice Apu on The Simpsons as he finds it insensitive in today's climate. Steve Martin and Martin Short are teaming up for a Hulu series about three strangers obsessed with true crime who find themselves wrapped up in one. In other words, us, the show. Disney has axed the... that's because we like true crime. Guys, that's what I was trying to...
Right.
Yeah, you got that? Okay.
I got it.
It didn't work at all. Disney has axed the Fox from all of their film studios, meaning it's now 20th Century Fox and Searchlight Pictures. And also, we don't know what's going to happen with the Fox Network. No idea there yet. And Fox News, maybe it'll just be called News, I guess. Barbara Broccoli has put it to bed that James Bond can be any color, but he has to be a man, baby. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Peacock streaming channel will launch on April 15th for Xfinity One and Flex customers and everyone else July 15th. Finally, an advantage to being a Comcast customer. Watchmen will not be going forward with a season two. Mindhunter will not get a season three anytime soon because David Fincher is too busy. And also, the Game of Thrones prequel, House of the Dragon, will follow the Targaryens and will launch in 2022. Guess what? Spoiler alert, we know how that one ends.
Are you trying to do bad jokes just to make sure that the people don't want this anymore?
Shh, that wasn't bad. I thought that was clever. Both National Treasure 3 and Bad Boys 4 are moving forward, as is a remake of Kung Fu from Hobbs and Shaw director David Leitch. Netflix is making a biopic, pick your poison, on composer Leonard Bernstein that will be written, directed, and starring Bradley Cooper, and also produced by Cooper, Spielberg, Scorsese, and Todd Phillips, because Netflix wants that Oscar. And lastly, and most importantly, a study from the University College of London found that going to the theater can be as good for your heart as going to the gym. Whew. Let's just also remember that they had to call their college, University College of London. They need both of those, apparently, to sound smart. John, what do you think of all of that? What really stood out to you as, damn, that was exciting?
There's an awful lot. Like, I'm super excited that National Treasure 3 is actually going to happen. I guess they're going to dig up Justin Barta and the remnants of what's her face's career to get them to do this whole thing.
Ouch.
The first two movies were just so much fun, and I enjoyed them immensely, just because like this whole mixture of history with this adventure theme to it was a lot of fun. If I were to equate it to anything, it'd be like that show with Noah Wiley on TNT that about the alien invasion, the first season of it where he was a history professor and they're dealing with the aliens, and he would relate everything to something in history and as to why he was so insistent that they could win against these aliens. I thought that was also really cool. So that's why I like National Treasure.
What does it have to do with aliens?
Well, I was just trying to relate as to what I think is cool about National Treasure, okay. Which those two things have. I'm going to turn history around and use history as a way to teach what's going
on. Got it. Got it. I didn't get it until you explained it. Thank you.
Sorry.
No, I appreciate the explanation, because otherwise I was gone. Didn't know what was going on.
I'm excited about Netflix's commitment with the Bradley Cooper movie about Bernstein, because first of all, how they landed all of these producers that have such high names. Like, these are great, large names. Spielberg. There was Spielberg, Phillips, Scorsese, and Bradley Cooper isn't as large, but he's good.
What?
And, well, he's not as big as Steven Spielberg.
Okay. I mean, okay. Yeah, you're right. He's not as big as Steven Spielberg, but he's not, like, small.
He's not a little guy. Right, right.
He's very medium. It's fine. Stop shaming him.
I'm not shaming him. It's fine to be in the middle. Or he's above the middle. He's just working.
Is this like a girth versus length thing going on?
I would love to be that middle. In my life, I would love to be as middle as Bradley Cooper.
I just mean when you're talking about a director.
No, I got it. I got it. I'm just letting you know, I would love to be the middle that Bradley Cooper is. I want to be that middle. It's the exact kind of middle I aspire to my entire life.
I'll never hit that level of mediocrity in my life.
No, exactly.
Well, you can aspire.
No, I can't. That is way beyond any sort of ability I have.
All right, so you want the movie. Why do you want the movie?
Well, I think it's nice to see all of these individuals coming together for Netflix, because Netflix has been so berated. I feel like they've been parodied by the Oscars for the last few years, where it's like, your movie did not do this, and your movie got in, but it's not going to get that. And then they're like, no, but we're really going to take the gold here. And then the story is also about a composer, a pianist, which I love piano music. So I don't know. It should be interesting, especially when you have that many names behind it.
And he's done a lot of wonderful scores, On the Waterfront being one of them. And apparently in Amanda's version of the Oscar trophy, he has that Snidely Whiplash mustache back there in the side. Netflix. Like, they're taunting him every year. Yeah, we'll give you the nominations, but you're never getting me.
Sucker.
So funny.
At some point, they just, well, especially after, and you know, one of the pieces of news we didn't even talk about came out from, was it Terry Moore? Did you guys hear about the comments, the remarks from the Academy member about Adam Sandler and the like?
Oh, about why they were
Jennifer
denied,
Lopez.
Why they were denied nominations because their movies aren't cool enough, and Adam Sandler is kind of, he's arrogant, the least arrogant guy in Hollywood.
Yeah. Eddie Murphy tried too hard because, like, I mean, all of these different things that other people can do and these individuals specifically could not do for the same exact reason is just outlandish to me. And I feel like this Netflix is also in that competing mindset, because according to this Academy member, and I won't speak for them, but the interpretation I had was, you do have to have a certain level of poise from these Academy members, and you better meet their criteria, not based on your work necessarily. There's a lot of other things that they're going to define you by. And if you do comedies and things that aren't top-notch all the time, then you're not going to be considered. You have to have multiple runs for you to even be considered. And I don't know, that just kind of...
Can I just break in? I don't think it takes hearing from an Academy member to assume that that's the reason why Adam Sandler didn't get a nomination. Because
right.
And if you follow them at all, you know pretentious kind of goes with the gold. And Adam Sandler loves to make movies that they don't like. And he doesn't. He wants to go on vacation with his buddies and stuff. And they, and you know what? He's made a lot of money doing it, and also kept his buddies employed. So the idea that he's arrogant, which is what they, because he went on Howard Stern and said, you know what, if I don't get the Oscar, I'm going to make a really horrible movie just to show them. And it was a joke. And this person, this voter actually referenced that as him being arrogant. And I'm like, well, that's why you'll never understand who Adam Sandler is. That, based on what I have assessed of his character by everyone that speaks to him and about him.
Yeah.
He's an all around great guy. Even Jennifer Aniston referenced him in her SAG speech. So, suck it.
Yeah, and
I
agree with you that it's something we've all known, but to hear the way that it was defined, the criteria that excluded them from being genuinely considered, and I mean, I get J-Lo. I get hers. Just
whoa.
Like her movie.
Whoa.
Well, that movie just wasn't in comparison with all the other films. I get that movie not being part
of it. I'm telling
you,
based on the five that were nominated, she rose up to those five.
To those five, sure. But I think there was a lot that was missed. I mean, Lupita not being part of us.
I wish there was a little bit more that was missed. I was like,
oh, my right? goodness.
You know what I mean?
Oh, dear. Oh, no.
In her performance. You know, there's a couple bits, right? Just they could have trimmed a little bit of that.
All sorts of bits.
Oh, God. It's getting worse.
Lupita wouldn't have been in the same category. So it didn't. Wouldn't have affected.
Fair, but,
yeah,
but I'm just saying there are a lot of different performances that were missed.
But what are you excited about, Aaron?
None of it. No, I'm just kidding. Jack Reacher is going to be a TV series. That's cool. That is great. The Peacock thing. I don't understand why we need another streaming channel. That's fine if we're going to have one. That's fine. But they're apparently taking a lot of NBC and Universal's properties are all going to be on there, which means if you watch Amazon Prime, you're going to lose a lot of your Universal properties and Law and Order and Psych and Monk and shows like that. Suits, they're all going to go into Peacock. So I don't know, man. It's just one more. We're going to have cable again. We've talked about it before, and we're talking about TV this episode. So it's just one more step back to cable, and I don't know if I really like that.
Yeah, once they announced this one, I'm kind of with you on it. Although I got to tell you, oddly enough, I can't hear the name of it without thinking about that Katy Perry song. So I don't know what that says about me, but.
Is there a song called Peacock from Katy Perry?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. Amanda, do you know music? Did you know that?
I don't really like Katy Perry, so.
Oh, my God.
She is an angel and she deserves to be respected.
She kisses children without consent on a TV show.
I like it. Yeah, kiss me without consent. I consent.
I'll let it slide.
Right? I think it's great. Go ahead. No. You know what? Those are the luckiest kids. They don't even know it yet.
Yeah, right? So what do you think? Actually, I want to ask you, what do you think about this whole Watchmen not going any further? Are you happy? I imagine you are happy about this.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was 9 episodes. Damon Lindelof didn't want to do another season. He gave HBO their blessing, and they said, well, let's just cap it. Honestly, I feel like when it got to the end of that, I didn't need any more. Like, I feel like that story is told. I don't need 40 seasons of every TV show. So I'm absolutely good with it. And you ended strong. Walk away.
Yeah, I'm really with you on that. I don't need any more of that story. I really don't know how they would tell that story any further, but... it was a very interesting and engaging story to be told, and I'm glad that they decided to do just a one and done. It makes I want to see more TV like that.
All right, well, we're gonna try something different. Well, I think we did it once before, but we haven't done it since. But you can do it. It's a different kind of game. Basically, a host, and it's gonna be Amanda this time, is gonna take a movie or TV series they genuinely don't like and find a legitimately positive element to it. The idea is. We all should do it because we don't see it much on the internet. As everybody hates so many things, nobody tries to find the positive in it. So that's what we're trying to do. Bring a little love into the world.
Bring a little love in your heart.
So Amanda, first, what is the movie or TV show you chose for this?
Lady in the Water.
Yes!
That is like your least favorite movie ever.
Ever. Yep.
And you're
that's why I figured it'd be a challenge.
Hang on. And you're genuinely going to find a positive element, not like a sarcastic, snarky element.
It's one thing that it had going for it, and under different circumstances of the film, it could have had a lot of potential. But at least in the way that it was used in this film, at least you can't go wrong with this piece.
Okay. Here, let's hear the positive. Boy, it already sounds like you're underselling it a little bit. I gotta. I'm crossing my fingers.
This is like you trying to convince people you like Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Come on.
Like your voice says one thing, and your words say something completely different, and the two don't meet, and it's already starting to happen.
See, this is a great exercise we all need to take. Is that we all find things we don't like, and then it's hard to find the positives. It's important to at least try genuinely to find the positive. Not like when you do reference Tom Cruise and you're like, well, you know, he's really good at stunts. And you say that with...
I don't say it like that. I'm just... He's a great stuntman.
Stunt performer.
Yeah, he is.
He's not an actor. He's a stunt performer.
Not an actor.
He's not even a great stunt performer. He broke his ankle last time. All right, let's do it. Excite me with some positivity.
So when I tried to think about the positives for any movie, and I hadn't isolated what one I would use yet, but I wanted to find something that was irrefutable. It was something that if I wrote the review on it today, despite any flaws that I found in the movie, I could at least come out saying, this is a good element from the film.
Okay.
And so I decided I was going to challenge myself and figure out what part of The Lady in the Water that I would have said that I enjoyed, and that it has a contributing positive element. And that's the casting of the two leads. Bryce Dallas Howard and Paul Giamatti are both incredible performers in general.
Are they stunt performers?
No.
Well, she's in the water.
What's that?
I said she is in the water.
Sure. Takes a lot of aerobic exercise to get up to that stamina level.
You could drown if you get
some buoyancy.
You could.
Some buoyancy. Sorry.
Dear God. But the two of them have a level of chemistry on screen together. And overall, you really can't go wrong with two actors that have a long-standing history of being pretty incredible. And this is no different for this film. The two of them are still good performers as an actor and an actress. So that's my positive take for Lady in the Water.
Why can't they both be actors?
Because that's not how the Academy Award lists them.
She's right.
That's a very fair answer. I just wanted to know, as somebody who is concerned with gender roles, why can't they just both be both, which you are, why can't they just be both actors, Amanda?
She answered it.
Yeah, it's not my definition. I'm just
being combative. That's all.
I mean, I should note, John, that we don't recognize it here on the show when we do our awards, which are next week. Cheap plug. What?
That's right.
But it makes it more difficult to really narrow it down when you don't have it categorized in some way, either by gender or by genre of film or whatever it might be.
Yeah,
and I think the Academy genuinely, I think this is their way of finding a way to be fair to the two genders, but also make it easier for them to decide who gets an award.
And plus, actors are more popular, so therefore, better ratings.
What?
You have 4 awards for acting versus 2 awards for acting.
Ah, okay. I see where you're going.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
You have 20 actors versus 10 actors at the ceremony. It's all about ratings and people watching. Trust me. If they thought it didn't matter, it would be actor tomorrow.
Right.
It's just because, well, now we can make sure we get Renee Zellweger and George Clooney in the same room at the same time. You know, that's all.
Which was Renee Zellweger face, though?
Oh, that's not cool, man. That's not cool. I'm putting a stop on that one. Not cool, John.
Aw, damn it. That's the one road you won't go down with me on?
I won't. She's a lovely woman.
I didn't say anything.
You know what? You need a little bit more buoyancy in your life. Good job, Amanda. You can do it. You did it.
That was really great. I actually really love that movie.
Really? Why? God,
why?
Well, partially because of the reason why you mentioned, which is the two leads are pretty great. And the story is just so whimsical and different that
dumb.
It's engaging.
You used the wrong D word. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
When did I use a D word?
You said different.
And I said dumb.
You know.
But it is different. You're right. It's different.
It's very different.
And it is. That's
what makes it very special, that somebody decided to say, to look at this story and say, I want to tell this story that nobody else has really told before. And whether it's dumb or not, I'm going to try to do the best I can with a great cast and an interesting way of telling the story with a point of view that we rarely ever see. So I thought, yeah, I mean, that's why I really enjoy it. That and Paul Giamatti really is just a sweet guy and so easy to fall for in his role as the
He's captivating for sure.
God, I just fell asleep from all that wrongness. All right, so our show is independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are paid from our own pockets, and Patreon helps fans support the favorite podcast. If you like this show, you can sign up and get immediate access to all the bonus content we have in your respective tier that you sign up for. We just did a bad movie night on the first Bad Boys. So if you want, you can sign up and hear a lot about proper police procedure and what it was like in 1995 and why does nobody wear a shirt buttoned up? I don't understand. But anyway,
hot in Miami.
You can support the show by going to patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. That's patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Sign up and you'll get instant access once you sign up. Boom. Now we go to spoiler free reviews. We got two of them. One for Doolittle, one for Bad Boys for Life. What?
You said a name and it just triggered me.
Wow. Okay. All right. So, Amanda saw this. I did not. John, you did not either, right?
I don't know what the movie theater looks like right now.
Okay. Robert Downey Jr.'s Doolittle is about the infamous man who has an innate talent with talking to animals and his journey after his wife's death. Isolating himself into confinement and closing the Doolittle Manor off with only the company of his incredibly long and scruffy beard and a variety of exotic animals, Doolittle starts the movie hopeless. When a squirrel gets injured nearby by a gunshot and a boy named Tommy feels a responsibility to save it, Doolittle receives a knock on the door. The queen is ill and has requested Dr. Doolittle's presence immediately to resolve her ailment, and if he refuses, the land he lives on may be stripped away with the queen's passing. The story then follows Doolittle's journey in order to save the queen and his land. Amanda, your written review on the site said to, quote-unquote, do as little as possible and avoid seeing this movie in a theater.
Yep.
To which I will throw out a little Friday. Damn! What did Doolittle get so completely wrong in your eyes? Like, what did they do so bad?
There's so much story in this movie. Even my review didn't touch on, because I didn't know if it'd be a spoiler or not. But there's another, like, four different storylines that are going on simultaneously. Some of them hardly get wrapped up. There's really weird character choices and journey choices. The whole movie is just a mess. The script, I don't know who thought this was a good idea. I don't feel that there was a genuine direction for the film. And it's fine if you're on, because this is supposed to be much more like an adventure film. So it's fine if you have a lot of different things that they have to encounter and they move along, but there's one main story that we're following. This one has like eight and more than one nemesis to worry about. And like, things don't get wrapped up. There's so much that happens and it's just anticlimactic. And then there's one moment that's supposed to be like a huge moment and it's the most dull. It happened and I was like, that's it? We're done with that now? Okay.
Does your opinion change if it's, you're looking at it from the perspective of kids, or you don't even see how kids could really enjoy this one? You know what I mean? Because sometimes with a family film, you go, you see it, and you're like, all right, this isn't for me. But if I was 8 or 10, this would be great.
I mean, kids aren't analyzing it from the standpoint of how does this all work together and how coherent is it? And the kids are going to laugh at some of the stupid choices, like bagpipes getting pulled out of a dragon's ass. I mean, among many other things.
I mean, I kind of giggled. So.
But there's just so many weird choices. I think kids will enjoy the visual aspect of it and the humor behind it because it does have some funny points. And I don't really think they'll fully be discouraged by the story. But it may, for younger ones, they may have a hard time following what the heck is going on because we're here. Now we're over here. Now we're over there. It's like, no offense to anybody who has this disorder, but it's almost like the writer had ADHD and just couldn't focus on where they genuinely wanted the story to be.
I'm feeling attacked.
Yeah, me too. I have ADHD.
I know. That's why I said no offense.
Well, I mean, it's America. Everybody's diagnosed with ADHD.
Right. But, and it's a genuine disorder and et cetera. But
thank God. I've been using this as a crutch forever.
But there's just so much that isn't focused. So yes, kids may enjoy what there is, but if they're too young to follow, or maybe they like more cohesive stories, they're going to be like, what is this nightmare?
One thing that stood out to me when I saw the trailer is Robert Downey Jr. has this really odd accent. Let me ask, though, how was his overall take on Doolittle? Like, his just as the character, how did he do?
The character itself was fun. He felt like he genuinely, in a very weird way, connected with these animals. And they did a decent job of helping you understand that he's not talking to them in a human voice and understanding them. He's actually talking to them in their animal voices. And so you get to see both sides of that. You get to hear them talk as people, and it's basically how he would interpret it. And then we get to see it from the outsider's point of view of him talking in gorilla to a gorilla. And yes, okay. He really does do these. So it's a little off-putting, but he does a nice job of making it seem more realistic somehow. He is okay, but what he has to work with is so just devastatingly sad to have to watch him go through this. Like, I feel like his career went backwards.
So the accent's not awful as it seems in the trailer, then.
It's very jarring at first, but after a while, you probably get used to it. But I definitely noticed, I don't really know what kind of accent he's trying to use here.
That sounds,
like, what is this?
It sounds like he was almost pulling a Johnny Depp based on what I saw.
Yeah.
Special effects of the animals were great, though.
They were pretty good, yeah. Okay. I mean, I didn't have any huge complaints about that.
All right, so $10 full price of admission. What do you give Doolittle that you would do as little as possible to see in a theater?
Honestly, I've contemplated lowering my score, but I guess I'll keep it at 450.
That's great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Savage.
Yeah.
Whew. Okay, well, moving on to a much better movie that shocked everybody by almost doubling what forecasters had presumed it was going to make at the box office. Had a huge weekend. Bad Boys 4 is already in the works. Johnny, Bad Boys for Life. I saw it. You lead the way.
Yeah, so Aaron got to see this. I don't know what else I have to say about this. Mike Lowry's back, and so is Marcus Burnett. And Michael Bay is not. That's weird. Anyhow, Aaron, you got to see this. Like you just pointed out, because you wanted to do my script for me, it's doing kind of awesome. Do these guys have the chemistry still?
They do. Do you want to know what it's about at all, John? Or are you just going to skip right over there? Like, plot doesn't matter? Is that where we're at?
It doesn't. I mean, it should be Mike Lowry does some sexy fighting stuff. Marcus Burnett sits there and complains about not getting any from his wife. Mm. And the fact that he's like the new Murtaugh and wants to retire and sit on the couch.
That's where I'll stop you, my friend. That's the biggest surprise. And I get why you would be there like that. You know, typically we like flesh the plot out a little bit, then get into the questions. But I'm going to let you know, it's the complete opposite of the movie I thought it would be. There is a genuine story. Like,
what?
Actual plot.
No, this is, you're lying to me, because I watched the second one just this weekend. And there's no plot there either.
There's no plot there. The first one, no plot. Neither one of those movies showed that these are actual police officers that should have badges. They should be in jail. Really, they're criminals based on what they do. This actually has a story and a plot and consequences. There are legitimate consequences to all the violence that they wreak and the havoc that they wreak. You have Mike Lowry, who wants to be this bulletproof cop forever. And, you know, Marcus Burnett, which if you go back and watch the previous movies, which we all did, you will notice that Marcus Burnett has never really been on board with the violence, right? He's kind of been against it the whole way. This is kind of like the next evolution where he's in his 50s now. He's done. He's sick of doing this with Mike in terms of, man, I don't want to risk my life anymore. I want to enjoy life. And they spend a good amount of time setting up that they are partners. They are friends. They care about each other. The one thing I thought was missing from the first two movies is, yeah, you see him do it, but you never get that family love that you got in The Lethal Weapon. Even though, you know, it's fun with the family stuff and it's comedic, it never felt like as warm as Lethal Weapon did. You know, I never doubted that Riggs would do anything for Murtaugh and vice versa. A lot of times in the first two movies, I kind of felt like Marcus didn't even like Mike. For large portions of the movies. Am I wrong? I mean, we just rewatched
No, in the first two movies. It's like, how are these two friends? Since childhood, how are these two friends?
And I will say, like, I don't think the timeline in this movie quite works up. There's a couple times, like, 24 years ago and 25 years ago. I'm like, man, the movie came out 25 years ago. That math don't work. But whatever. I skip by that. This movie actually showed them as partners, as friends, and as family. There is some real stakes and real things happen. And you really get to see how much Marcus loves Mike and how much Mike loves Marcus and how much they both need each other to do what they need to do to survive and catch the bad guys and everything else. There's a crime family is coming back and they're going after targets, and Mike Lowry's one of the targets. So he's trying to find them before they find him, kind of thing. That's the simple plot. But there is so much more to it because you have those characteristics and you have the partnership. And you have this new team, Ammo, which is a bunch of the cast of High School Musical as young cops, but they're using technology and they're trying not to use brute force. You know, they're trying to use their smarts. And these old guys, these old dogs, they want to just use the same old tricks they've always done. They want to just go in, break the law, and get things done. Well, they can't do it anymore. And the captain's back and everything else. So you asked me, does the chemistry work? I think that was your question.
Yeah, that was the question 15 minutes ago.
Thank you. Fair. I think the chemistry actually works better here than it has in either of the first two movies.
So they matured.
They did. And yes, Marcus does want to retire and he wants to be done with it. Mike Lowry doesn't. But it's really like the evolution of their relationship has gone to a point where they need each other. They can't solve their personal dilemmas in the movie without each other. But they both try to do things on their own, and it doesn't work out. But it makes more sense in this one than it did in any of the other movies. The first movie, the plot doesn't make any sense. The second one, they should have just been locked down and in jail for most of the movie because they destroy so much of Miami. And there's not as much of that. Like, a lot of this, they follow police procedure a couple times in this movie where I was like, wow, that's how you're supposed to do it. Like,
wow.
You actually followed code of conduct. I don't understand
what I'm watching.
They actually
put gloves on.
And it's noticeable that Michael Bay is absent because...
Well, that's my next question. Yeah, so this is directed by Adil El Arif and Bilal Falah. So I wanted to know if the lack of Michael Bay is actually absent with these two guys at the helm.
It's better, honestly. And not to say that Michael Bay isn't great. He's great.
Well, thank you for deciphering what I was trying to say. I just realized my question was backwards.
That's okay, but it made sense. The directors I know because they did a foreign film called Black, which is a great movie. It's like Romeo and Juliet, but it's more balanced in black culture. And it's a really great movie. I saw it at South By many years ago. So I actually knew these guys walking in. I was like, wow, these guys directed it? That's cool because I really love that movie and nobody talks about it. The action scenes aren't as bombastic. They aren't as far-fetched and crazy. They're a lot more down to earth in most respects. So that part is much less Michael Bay. That part, I would say, is probably less exciting because Michael Bay knows how to do a set piece, man. I mean, you can say what you want about the guy. He knows how to blow stuff up well.
Right.
That doesn't really happen here. There aren't any major explosions until maybe the end, but everything really kind of makes sense, and the action scenes are still fun, and they get things done, but it just feels like it's more grounded. It makes more sense. It's more modern. It just feels like the Bad Boys from 95 brought into today, and it's never more prominent. There's actually, Michael Bay does a cameo. I won't tell you where it is, but when he does it, it's almost like it draws attention to me that, wow, this is a totally different movie, and they barely let you even show up this time, and you can tell. So, all right, so they did a great job.
So you already said that they're going to do Bad Boys 4 on this.
Mm-hmm.
What do you want to see them do next?
That's tough because I will say Martin Lawrence, you know, Will Smith doesn't look much older. He's still in better shape than I'm ever going to be in and ever. And Martin Lawrence definitely looks like you and me, John. I mean, he's frumpy. He's frumpy. Actually, more like me, less like you now.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I don't know if I want them going off you know, blazing guns down the street anymore, because I just don't know if Martin Lawrence can do that anymore. I want them to be partners. Maybe Martin Lawrence can get promoted or something and be over Mike. So he's still involved in the crime scene, but doesn't necessarily have to be blazing, you know, throwing guns around or whatever else they need. And Mike can actually team up with Ammo and have those young cops come back. I think it would be fun just to have an entire movie where it's him teaming up with the young cops and they're actually on the same side. Cause for a lot of this movie, they're polar opposites. They're kind of bumping heads. If they were on the same side and trying to get the same goal, I think that could be fun.
Cool. All right. What was your final score?
$10 full price admission. I give Bad Boys for Life $7.50.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
It's good times. Good times. All right. Another segment that I want to get rid of and the guys won't let me. Upcoming releases. So coming out this week, whenever you're listening to it, this is January 24th that these are coming out. The Gentleman, it's a British drug lord trying to sell off his highly profitable empire to a dynasty of Oklahoma billionaires. It's directed by Guy Ritchie, stars Matthew McConaughey, and it's got Charlie Hunnam in it as well. The Turning comes out January 24th. That's a young governess is hired by a man who has been responsible for his young nephew and niece after the death of their parents. It's a modern take on The Turn of the Screw. And it's starring Mackenzie Davis and Finn Wolfhard. So that should be interesting. And Color Out of Space is the last theater movie. It's going to be more limited. After a meteorite lands in the front of their farm, Nathan Gardner and his family find themselves battling a mutant extraterrestrial organism that infects their minds and bodies, transforming their quiet rural life into a technicolor nightmare. It's based on a Lovecraft short story directed by Richard Stanley, who wrote The Island of Dr. Moreau. And stars Nicolas Cage.
And then on Netflix on January 23rd, October Faction, monster hunters Fred and Dolores Allen tangle with evil and family drama with their teenage twins. It's based on the comic book.
Now, of all those guys, what is your pick of the week? What are you going to see?
I'm going to see October Faction because I don't have to leave my house.
John is basically going to become sponsored as a human by Netflix.
I would love every second of that. If they'd be like, we're going to pay you money to watch Netflix. I'll be like, nothing but Netflix. I'll be like, all right. I mean, it's going to be tough, but I think I can do that. Do I need pants?
No.
John, you have a problem.
I'm in.
You have a problem. Amanda, what is your pick?
This is actually pretty easy for me, The Turning.
Really? Why?
I love the story, Turn of the Screw, which is also inspiration for The Haunting of Bly Manor. So if you want kind of, I don't know what the adaptation looks like for this film yet, obviously, but I'm excited to see how it adapts. And then also, like, this apparently the story is just getting some big turns this year. Haha, you see that?
I see what, especially when you said, hey, did you see that? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I like to point those out in case anyone misses them.
Man, I love Guy Ritchie. He's made some great crime flicks. I'm on board The Turning. I haven't had a really cool atmospheric horror movie in a while, and that's what it sounds like. I'm bored. Nick Cage always scares me anymore.
I started to get like PTSD from the poster imagery or whatever.
It reminded you of Mandy?
It reminded me of Mandy, yes, and I was terrified. I was like, I don't want to go through this again.
You know, Mandy landed on so many people's best of the decade.
I know.
I don't understand how I haven't seen it yet, but it landed on so many people's best of the decade. I'm trying to figure out how you two hated it so much.
Oh, because it was awful.
Oh,
yeah. You know, I think it's great that critics like nothing movies, and you know, because it's artistic, that takes it to the next level. I require enjoyment of some sort. It can be heavy-hearted, it can be dramatic, it can be comedic, it can be horrific, whatever, but it's got to be enjoyment. And I have new, other than the chainsaw battle, that was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, that was cool.
Other than that movie made me have my own PTSD. I mean, it reminded me why I left the Navy. I want out. I want out so bad. Anything to let me out of this. That's really how I felt.
It was, in Aaron's point, it was artistic for artistic sake. It was bonkers for bonkers sake. I don't feel that you necessarily needed all of that heightened level of experience for this movie to be what it was. And I don't really feel like I had enough of a story. It was all metaphorical and interpretation, which is great and everything, but I just didn't give a crap.
And it was 30 minutes before I think anybody moved.
Yeah, it was a very slow. The pacing was poor.
Like it reminded me, you know how slow a burn it was? It's like my wife near the stove. That's how slow a burn it was, because the burner was just left on overnight and nothing happened. Thank God, but nothing happened. And the next day, it's just like it didn't happen.
You know, Aaron, as a friend, I feel like it lies on me to tell you delete this from the podcast, because if it gets back to her, you suddenly lose every sort of credibility or argumentative foothill that you gained from this.
No, John, much like Mandy, it was metaphorical. It was all metaphorical. I didn't mean it literal. Metaphorically, if she had done something like that, I should probably delete it. Okay.
I was going to say, you've been warned.
Let's go to our From the Outside In topic this week. What do you want from TV in 2020?
Porn.
You better leave this in there.
Okay. All right. There's 532 scripted shows on television last year, and that number likely is going to be eclipsed this year. So what more do you want from TV 2020? What could you possibly want? What is left that we don't have yet? What do you want from TV in 2020, man?
I want to see, let me preface this by saying this won't be a total feminist comment. Let me speak before you all jump on me.
If you got to preface it, then it's definitely going to be a feminist.
No, I feel
I'm
going like to
need
now,
a drink first.
Now, yeah. Whenever I say something about women, it's like, oh, she's a feminist.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with feminists. Stop saying it like that, Amanda.
That's not what the internet tells me.
Look, I don't want to hear you say it like that, though.
There you go.
Thanks. I want stories about women.
I think she just told you.
That put them at the forefront, but I don't want them to necessarily be flawless. A lot of times the women, the superheroes, whatever they might be, they are either completely flawed and they're broken and they're not doing much of contribution, or it's just revenge, like there's something negative about them, or they're just too pure. And I want that middle level of almost like an anti-hero. I want one that isn't perfect, but can inspire in some way and hold that story for us. And I'd also really like more Merritt Weaver as a detective, however I can get that.
Unbelievable or anything else? I mean, I think what you're
her own show.
What you're asking for makes sense. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
I dig it. Let the ladies have a chance.
When you say that, it came out so wrong. It just did. Even though you didn't mean it that way, it just came out that way. I mean, you're almost like Cliff on Cheers right now. That's how you're coming. I'm just letting you know you're Cliff from Cheers. Us old people.
Maybe that's my new bit.
Yeah. Sorry, Amanda, what were you saying? I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, oh, no, you're fine. I was probably just going to repeat the same thing I do. Like, talk about the same point 8 times over.
Good call. At least you own it.
Wow, there's some growth happening here tonight. I'm sorry. I was just kind of floored by the fact that there's some growth happening tonight. I just want to watch it happen. I want to watch this plant go. I don't really know what I want from TV anymore, because when I look at the stuff that I enjoyed this last year, it kind of goes all over the place. But I feel like the thing that draws my attention the most are things that tell stories, similar stories to what I've been getting, but from a slightly off-kiltered angle and twists them a little bit. So like The Boys, I really loved that, and it twisted it to an extent where it made it a whole new interesting idea. Watchmen, kind of the same sort of thing, only different, and it made it more of a, I don't want to say procedural, but more of a history lesson that needed to be told. And God, there's just so many other things that I can think of in the past few years. I never thought that I would love Haunting of Hill House nearly as much as I did, but I feel like I want more things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, not necessarily just the anthology, but things that take risk with storytelling and take risk with imagery and just take a whole lot of risk and have fun with it and just give us something that we're not getting anywhere else. That I really want more of those interesting storytelling and just things that know that we can sit here for, we have 8, 9, or 10 hours to sit in this story and just let it unfold in front of your eyes. I want that.
Yeah, that's a good, you bring up Hill House. That's a really good one. Just because, I mean, you have a show that's what, 10 episodes and then right in the middle, it's doing this weird artistic choice where it's supposed to be like, just a couple one takes, which is amazing, but you don't see that usually in the first season of a show. That's usually something that would happen. It's like the musical episode of something.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen until like 5 years down the road when they know they have a lot of stock. So that's pretty ballsy. I do think we need more of that stuff. I want more 8-episode seasons of everything. I'm kind of done with 22-episode TV. I mean, not that I'll never watch one again, but if I have to choose between 22 and 8, I'm taking 8 every time. I just wish that was the norm at this point. I really do.
I'm with you.
Is it just because you feel you can get more shows in of like different variety because you're able to, I can knock this one out and I can knock that one out? Or do you feel like the actual writing is just more concise? Like, is it more about your time or is it about the actual show that contributes most to that?
That's actually a good question. It's both, really. It's both. I just don't feel like you can't give me a show that has 22 episodes and has consistent storytelling all the way through.
No, because inherently they're going to have, of those 22 episodes, 10 to 12 of them are going to be filler episodes to buy us some time and or to spread the story out, and or they're going to be some weird offshoot of a story and a weird break or focus on something that completely different.
Right.
Those are all problematic issues with the 22 episode format, and it's not as necessary as it used to be because you don't have advertisers working the way they used to, or the television landscape built the way it was to support it anymore.
Right, and a big part of it, and this is probably the real reason for me, Amanda, is, you know, when 24 was on, right, it had 24 episodes, it was serialized, and they had a lot of filler in it, but I could keep up with it because it was exciting, it was enticing, and there wasn't much doing that at the time. Serialized storytelling wasn't really happening very often. Cut to now, everything is serialized. In fact, I would say way too much is serialized. There aren't that many pick-up-and-play TV shows right now. So you've got 22 episodes of a show, and then you've got 530 shows, and you're watching however many you watch regularly. I just don't want to have to remember everything. I don't want to remember every plot detail. The previously on doesn't really fill me in on all the gaps, and I get tired of just having to try to retain everything that is necessary to really enjoy a show to its fullest. Not to mention, since 24, I don't, maybe Lost, I don't think I've seen a show that went over 13, 14 episodes that was serialized that didn't start to drag the hell on as it went. It just, the writing just can't support it. Look at Walking Dead's a prime example. The writing just can't support it. It's too serialized. It goes on too long. It just needs to be shorter. Now, I do like pick-up-and-play shows. I do like shows that I can just stick it on and go, but there aren't enough of them that are really, to me, engaging. And too many of them now try to be a pick-up-and-play or plug-and-play, however you want to say it, show, but also have a serialized element, which means I can't just jump in. And I want shows where I can just jump in or shorten the seasons. It's just 22 is just too much anymore. I just don't have the time. There's too many great TV shows on all the streaming networks, which we now have, all the networks that we still have, there's just too much to have 22 episode seasons still.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Anything that's going to get me to sit down and watch it, it's going to be one of those 8 to 10 episode seasons. And the stuff that's 22 episodes and higher, I wait till the summer, and it's something that I'll push play on, and it's not something that I definitely give 100% of my attention to. I'll have it on while I'm doing a drawing. I'll have it on while I'm fixing a drone. I'll have it on while I'm doing this, because I know that there's a lot of episodes that I can dip in and out of and not give 100% of my attention to, versus something that's 8 to 10 episodes where I know that every single episode is something that's going to have something for me to take with me to the next episode.
And also give it the length the show really needs. You know, Mandalorian is a great example of not overdoing it. You know, when we first got like our first couple episodes, everybody was saying how, man, something like 35 minutes. And they were feeling gypped. By the end of the like fourth or fifth episode, man, I love it. It's 35 minutes. This is great. I could just go. Because that's all the story. I mean, that story didn't need to be a full hour. Can you, if that show was an hour, if they stretched each of those episodes out with the story that it had, and very limited, and I use that in quotation marks, story, I really feel like you have a different response to that show. They didn't drag it out. They made it a reasonable amount of time for the story they were telling. And, you know, you're streaming now. It doesn't need to be an hour. It doesn't need to be 53 minutes. It doesn't need to be 46 minutes for commercials. Make it however long it needs to be to tell whatever the story is. Make it tight, succinct. Let's, you know, be able to enjoy it a little bit more. Except instead of, because I'm feeling exhausted right now, just trying to keep up. I don't want to feel exhausted watching TV. That's one. That's one of the things. Man, I have three total. The other one, I want another great buddy crime show with jokes like Psych or Lethal Weapon. That's like my sweet spot. And those are my joy. And I don't really have my joy right now. I got nothing to fill that void. So I love that.
Yeah, I mean, I really love Psych. And I was on the Lethal Weapon bandwagon before it came out because I was just, I had so much faith in that cast. But I'm with you. I really miss something like that, too.
My last one, and this is something that I think would be really cool, even though I'm tired of zombies and everything else. I would love a TV series that looks at something like the zombie apocalypse or Annihilation of the World, something along those lines, you know, dystopia, post-apocalyptic, whatever, in positive terms. And just to explain, like how much easier traffic would be, how much easier dating would be, you know, there's a lot less choices. You know, you're willing to let a few things slide now and again, but not as like a cheeky comedy, like a legitimate, this might be awesome take on it. I just feel like there's a brilliant show there somewhere that everybody's missing and I would love to watch it.
That's a good idea. It sounded very comedy while you were reading it. And then as I continued to think on it, when you said, no, not comedy though, I was like, well, I guess that could work.
Yeah, like not
could work.
Well, they did a comedy version of that.
Of what?
Of like the Last Man on Earth.
Kind of. Yeah, but that was just like one guy, right?
Well, by the end of the show, or he found a girl pretty quickly into the season, and then there was like a whole bunch of other people that it got brought into it. So, yeah, it was the Last Man on Earth, but there were more people there.
I saw this show. I don't think it's quite the show I'm talking about. I want it to be like people aren't treating this like, oh, that's awful. And they spend the entire series mourning people that are gone. They actually enjoy that we have a lot less people. There's a lot less problems. We can redo the government. Traffic is no longer a problem. You know, just all of these little things that I think could be fascinating to explore. What if it happened? You know, everybody looks at the Annihilation as like the worst thing ever. What if it's not so bad if you're one of the ones that make it? That would be a cool show to me.
A Thanos supporter has the mindset ready for this.
That's fine. And all I want is story buy credit. That's all I need. I don't need any money, man. Just put story buy. That's good. And go off and do it. All right. What do you want less of?
22 episode shows. I want less shows, period. I want less of things that are going to make me feel overwhelmed on what I need to watch. Mm-hmm. Last season of television, I was rather happy because when I was looking at everything, I was like, there's not a lot I want to see. That's kind of nice. But when I was looking over 2020 shows, I mean, it was like a Sophie's choice trying to come up with the three. That's why I was like, hey, can I get more shows? Because there are so many great shows coming up or ideas that sound so whimsy and nice and fun and different that I don't know if I really want it or not, but I'm excited it's coming.
I'll tell you, I was talking to somebody just yesterday about this. They asked me why I watched so many movies during the year. You know, they asked how many movies. They read my article on top 10 most entertaining movies, cheap plug. And I said I watched over 130 movies. And why do you watch so many? I said, because honestly, there's so many great TV shows. There's still a lot of great movies. I'm sorry. Explore independent movies. There's a lot of great stuff out there. It's not just what comes to cinema. And I'm done in 2 hours. The story's told in 2 hours. I walk away. I love that. I'm a big fan. if I don't have to watch it for even eight hours. And it's a great story. That's the frame I want to be told the story in. I don't need everything to be a TV series. And there's too many TV shows right now. Just too many.
I'm going to second John's on the 22 episode, but I'm going to expand on it. Specifically, less medical dramas. Because
isn't that like your favorite thing?
It's not my favorite. And there was two shows that I'm really attached to. Now I only have one medical drama. And the reason I started to get tired of Grey's Anatomy is because they started to add more partner shows. Like they had a firefighter one that was connected to it. They have all of these other ones and they're all pretty much the same thing. And they're all repeating the same story. There's New Amsterdam. I love The Resident. I don't want to give that up. Grey's Anatomy just kind of got old and boring. I even tried to go back to it a couple weeks ago, and I was like, no. Mm-mm. I want more creativity because these stories are all doing the same thing. And it's just regurgitating it with a different cast. For the most part, like I feel like The Resident is a little bit different, at least, which is why I'm attached to it more. But I'm getting tired of it. I'm just tired of it.
I want less serialized everything. Or just less. I never thought I'd get to the point where I wanted less serialized, but I really do. Because I can't even start a show without having to watch the rest of the episodes. And that is just. Every show does the same thing now. I mean, it's getting to be how sitcoms were in the 90s and 80s, you know, where it's like every show is a sitcom. Well, every show is a serialized drama now. And there's an anti-hero. And oh my God, what's going to happen? The stakes are going to amp up until the end. And then, boy, we got to wait until the next year. I'm tired of serialized everything. I want to be able to just enjoy a show and walk away from it. Even comedies. John's going to talk about a show, and I won't mention which one it is until we get there, but a sitcom or a comedy, and even that is serialized. What? I can't even watch a comedy now without it being serialized. I'm tired of everything being serialized. And if you're going to serialize it, make it a season encapsulated arc like Westworld does, where by the end of the season, that story arc is concluded. So you could actually get very little information and start from the first episode of the next season and go to the end of it. I love that. That's fine. It's a little better if you do it that way. I'm just tired of having to think and remember stuff.
Said that you never thought that you would get to the point where you would be tired of serialized shows and that you'd want less of them.
Yep.
Did you guys ever genuinely think that we would get to a point in general where we would be overwhelmed by television? Like, not even to just complain about the type of TV, but just the amount of TV in general.
I never thought that I would ever be this concerned about how much TV there is, but I'm at the same time not nearly as concerned as I thought I'd be because I watch TV on my time. I don't let TV dictate when I need to see anything.
I do.
So that's helpful.
I do. I'm like, the TV talks to me. It speaks to me. I turn it on and it's like, oh, something new. Got to check it out. Something new. Got to check it out.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I love when people say, hey, man, I caught this old show. Have you ever heard of this? You should check it out. I'm like, I ain't got time. New stuff. Got to go.
To be fair, you've been watching consistently like that if somebody brings up an old show, you would answer, yes, I have, but now I'm watching this.
It's crazy, man. There's just, I never thought I'd get to the point where I had this much stuff. And I've gotten to the point where I don't necessarily need everything to be bingeable either. Everybody says they prefer that method. But nobody was complaining they wanted all Mandalorian at once. Because you know why? Everybody was talking about it. Disney Plus was smart. Everybody's talking about it that whole week. Everybody's sharing all those damn Baby Yoda or whatever memes.
The child.
Gifts, yes. And got more people and more people and more people. They were smart. I think there's something to be said about some kind of shows having that avenue. Witcher, I think, would be great on a week to week where you could build and build and build to, you know, where, oh my God, I can't believe that reveal. As opposed to people on the internet can tell you because they've already seen all the episodes. Interesting.
Yeah, there is something to be said about that. And I'll give Disney credit for that feat of being able to keep people going when the whole bingeable idea is people are so spoiled with it. I'm spoiled with it because I do love the idea of being able to sit there and be, you know, watch something, fall in love with it, and then keep watching it. I do love that. But with like, let's take Witcher, for example. I watched 2 or 3 episodes a night. That was it. And I was able to move on. And I didn't binge it all in one sitting like I have with so many other shows. Currently with one of my favorite shows that favorite new shows of last year, which is Sex Education. I think I'm only 4, maybe 5 episodes into the season. And I still got more to go. And I'm not really in a rush to watch it because I'm trying to savor it at the moment, trying to enjoy it. And it's a shame that it's a practice that I have to develop for myself versus letting Disney or Netflix or anybody else tell me I have to have that practice. But there might be something to it.
I'm so behind. I can actually, even if it aired weekly, I'd still be binging it when I finally got to it. Killing Eve came out however long ago when I finally got to it. I love that show. And I finally got to it because I've had so many other things before it. And of course, when you tell people, hey, I saw Killing Eve season 2, what took you so long? I thought you said you loved that show. I guess you don't love that show. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know there was nothing else on television.
I'm sorry. There's a time limit on my love for something.
Yeah, I have other stuff to do. I once in a while go outside.
I think that's probably what contributed to the adoration for binge watching, that it wasn't necessarily about the experience of seeing everything all at once. It was, I got to watch this A, before spoilers get out, and B, before the next thing comes out, because I need to have my time free for that show or this show or that show or this movie or whatever it is. And it just continued to like snowball. And here we are in this weird cyclical utopia pattern of watching everything all at once, or else our brains are so oversaturated, we're going to forget everything that happened in the last episode.
I actually started a book.
What? What's a book?
Seriously, I started a book on vacation, and I haven't gotten back to it. And this is the first week of January. I took a week off and just relaxed, didn't do anything. I started a book because I like to read. Believe it or not, I used to read a lot more. And ever since vacation ended, I haven't gone back to it because I'm like, oh, wait, that one thing's on. I got to check it out. I got to mentally condition myself to stop watching television. And I don't watch it. Like, I'm not sitting there 24 hours a day watching TV. But I just, when I do get some free time, I'll put it on and try to catch up. So I'm not doing other stuff that probably would stimulate my brain a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much. There's so much. And you know what I did? I really contemplated this while I was off for that week. This is a thing where I contemplated. We as people, everywhere in the world, right? You guys with me so far?
Yeah.
Are grossly overcharged for every item we buy. Do you know why?
Why?
Because Netflix and whatever they charge us, so obviously we're paying too much for the services that they can afford all this content. The things that we buy, vegetables, fruit, cars, vacations, posters, whatever you buy, socks, obviously they have too much money because they can afford to pay for the ads for 532 overly priced television shows that we continue to watch. Do you have any idea how much money that is? Netflix is spending $17 billion on content this year. Billion. Now, think about all the other networks, the Peacock and CBS and Disney Plus and everything else that's making original content. Think how much money they have to spend. We are overpaying for everything. That's the only way to justify how they have all this content. Because somebody's got to pay for it. The money comes from somewhere. They don't make these shows for free. This is the kind of stuff I think about when I have too much time.
So your thought is that we're overpaying on other regular, like everyday or large purchases.
Mm-hmm.
All those advertising.
The advertisements, right.
Ah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. They're getting us. Yep. Hell, I think maybe even they lined up with health care. I don't know. Maybe they've got some like backdoor Hulu deal with doctors for, oh yeah, you come in for a cold. You give us $50, we'll give you free Hulu for the year. What? That might be a little conspiracy theory.
Maybe just a little bit.
A little too much.
If you haven't lost the audience, you're starting to lose me.
All right. Let's go into your top 5 most anticipated new TV shows in 2020. Amanda, you can go first. Give us your top 5 most anticipated new TV shows, please. If you have the network and when it comes out, let us know.
So first one, which is number 1 for me, the rest are not in order, is WandaVision, and it comes to Disney Plus in 2020 sometime. I couldn't find an exact date. Mm-hmm. Follows the story of superheroes and romantic partners Scarlet Witch and Vision, who are both longtime members of the Avengers. Scarlet Witch is a powerful sorceress, and Vision is an android.
You know what I really like about this is some of the poster art for it is like the one where you see Wanda and Vision sitting on the couch together and you see their what their shadows are in the background. If you look at the shadow of Wanda, it's the comic book version of her costume.
Oh.
I had not noticed that, but now I'm going to go look for it.
No, I had not noticed that either. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And it reminded, I thought it was going to be, is it going to be like a 50s sitcom? It almost has a I Love Lucy, Dick Van Dyke kind of vibe with that whole couch setting.
Yeah, it did from what I noticed from it, but I don't know that we've gotten like full details beyond this minor release of information.
Hmm. All right.
As
I'm
to
in.
The story.
Okay, what else you got?
Little Fires Everywhere comes to Hulu on March 18th. It's based on the 90s novel about class and race conflicts in the ostensibly pristine community of Shaker Heights, Ohio. And it comes to Hulu courtesy of Reese Witherspoon's production company. Mm. Witherspoon plays yet another overbearing, all-too-perfect mother coming apart at the seams, while Kerry Washington plays an artist who moves to the town with her daughter in tow. Over the course of the limited series, their lives intertwine as their children bond.
You know, you got to give it to Reese Witherspoon. She really reinvented herself.
She sure did.
Yeah, she's like a TV maven now.
Talented.
Good for her. She's got to pay for that child by herself.
Wow. Ryan Phillippe gets TV work. They get canceled. He gets more TV work. They get canceled. He gets more TV work. They get canceled.
Yeah, whatever happened to that show?
Canceled.
They got canceled.
Oh.
I think I just explained what always happens in
this process.
You know, first of all, where were you? Secondly, I don't think they're together anymore.
No, they're not. But he's still got to pay for that kid. That's what I'm saying.
He's got to pay child support.
Not if Reese Witherspoon's making all this money.
Anyway.
Well, he would still have to pay. Unless she says, no, don't do it.
Let's invite him on the show and he can talk about his child support order.
Like, you know, it's okay. You can leave Taco Bell for a minute or two to be on the show with us.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Damn, poor Ryan Phillippe.
I Know This Much Is True comes to HBO in April. It's a limited series adaptation of Wally Lamb's novel of the same name and sees the actor in both the actor being Mark Ruffalo in both of the leading roles playing a pair of twin brothers. The drama follows both of their lives as they and their family struggle with the effects of mental illness and work together towards forgiveness.
Mm, that sounds really good.
Yeah. Some of the shots looked pretty interesting, too, that I saw of it. Next up is Snowpiercer coming to TNT May 31st. Bong Joon-ho's post-apocalyptic thriller is set more than 7 years after the world has become a frozen wasteland. The series centers on the remaining people who inhabit a gigantic, perpetually moving train that circles the globe.
And I'm really happy that's on TNT now, right?
Because
it was on TBS and that just never made any sense to me whatsoever.
Yeah, that's peculiar.
No, because they know funny.
I just saw the movie a few months ago. So that's what's like, oh, now I can't wait for the TV show because for me, it's fresh.
It is a great movie. I don't know if I need a TV show on it, though.
I'll check it out. I'm excited for it because I love the concept. And if they can make it interesting, I'm on board.
Ha ha ha.
Da 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 da.
Like, my biggest concern is like how much I loved Hannah as a movie, but the TV show, though good, it just dragged.
Yeah, I'm still pissed at you for Hannah, by the way.
Why?
Because when you first... See, here's the problem with John, okay? He'll watch two episodes and then give me his basic verdict on a show he's watching. Not for the show. When the show he reviews something, he watches all of them before he reviews it. I'm talking like when he's talking to me. And he'll be like, he'll watch just two or three episodes and be like, man, that was a really great show. Da-da-da-da-da. Never does the follow-up. Never does the... When he finally completes the arc, he's like, man, but it really kind of lost me about halfway through. And then I just, you know, it just didn't work for me. Overall, I really wouldn't recommend it. He never comes back to that. He always just stops at, it was great. I love the first three episodes. Were just incredible. Like, especially when you get to that first one. Then that second one happened. Yeah, he got me because I started watching Hannah. And about four episodes in, I'm like, this show sucks. What happened to this great show? This is boring. I'm sick of it. And then I asked him, he's like, oh, yeah, I meant to tell you. Like, that just didn't end up like where I thought it was going to be. It's fine. I'm like, man, I waste my time on fine.
Oh, man.
That's just, you know what? Really, you should circle back around to me.
Right. I should. Did you ever finish that show?
You know what, John? You watched this about 6 months ago. Well, how do you feel about it now? Oh, that sucked.
Yeah. That's what I'm going to start doing. Sorry, man.
My last one is The Undoing, which comes to HBO in May, which is surprising because normally I'm not a big Nicole Kidman fan. but Nicole Kidman reteams with Big Little Lies writer David E. Kelly for this miniseries adaptation of a novel about a successful marriage therapist whose life unravels after a murder. Hugh Grant plays the missing husband, because there's always a missing husband, and each episode will be directed by Bird Box filmmaker Suzanne Bier, so expect plenty of twists and suspense with this one.
I think we need a few more missing wives, really. It just feels like we're being pigeonholed into a stereotype that I'm not comfortable with.
You mean putting a bird box?
Oh!
Wow. All right, John, what do you or me? You choose.
You know what? I'll go. Because I got a whole lot of Netflix not to talk about here. My first show is HBO. It's the premiere date. They still don't know yet, but this is going to be Run. It's not officially Phoebe Waller-Bridge's newest project since Fleabag, but she is part of the producer team on this, and she's working with her longtime collaborator, Vicky Jones, and the show is a shrouded mystery thriller kind of thing, and it stars Merritt Weaver as a woman looking to reinvent herself and Domhnall Gleeson as a successful life guru. So that's a weird combination to see together. I'm all in for this. What do you guys think?
Merritt Weaver and Phoebe Waller-Bridge? Sold.
Yeah, I mean, I was sold at Phoebe Waller-Bridge, but you throw Merritt Weaver in? Domhnall Gleeson, not as much. Let's be honest. He's a little cheeky in the Star Wars movies, but he's still a good actor overall. So
He's one of my favorite parts of the Star Wars movies.
I don't understand that, dude. He's like the only person that thinks he's in a Monty Python flick.
And that's why I like it.
Okay. Fair enough.
I'm waiting for him to turn around at any movie, any point in those movies to be like, hey, wait a minute. Are we the bad guys?
Okay.
Are we the baddies? We have like skulls on our hats and all this. Are we the baddies?
That's all right.
Oh, boy.
Good call. I can accept that. What else you got?
All right, I have Dispatches from Elsewhere, and I gotta admit, one of the reasons why I'm so interested in seeing this is that it's created, produced, and it's starring Jason Segel. Mm. It's on AMC, and it premieres March 1st. It's kind of an anthology series where it stars really an ensemble cast. You have Sally Field, Andre Benjamin, Richard E. Grant, and Eve Lindsay, Lindley. And this is her breakout role. It's a...
Not if she can't get the name right. It won't be.
Yeah, right? I've never heard of her before, so I can't get it right. You know, considering the kind of things that Jason Segel's put out before, like Forgetting Sarah Marshall, The Five-Year Engagement, End of Tour, this has a chance of being something that's really well thought out, really whimsical and fun and interesting to watch. And it's, again, an anthology series that's kind of a like a whimsy magic theme to it, so I'm interested in seeing that.
Man, an anthology, I'm super interested.
I want that coined. I want that trademarked right now. It's anthology. Ain't got time for anthology. It's an anthology.
Hey, I love it.
I mean, the G got stuck somewhere.
It did. It got swallowed.
It's great.
Is that what you guys got? You guys got nothing but picking on me for my G getting lost in the
I mean, word? Jason's great. Jason Segel, I will watch it because of him. So I'm sure it'll be interesting, or at least funny at the very least.
I really hope Paul Rudd shows up when they bro hammer it out.
Oh my God, that'd be amazing.
That would be amazing.
All right, so just premiering on January 19th, which as of time of recording this was a couple days ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have Armando Iannucci's follow-up to, if you're a fan of Veep, In the Loop, In the Thick of It, Death of Stalin, any of these things, if you're a fan of this, you might really enjoy this. This is called Avenue 5. It's a weird kind of situation comedy about people working on a cruise liner and them having to deal with that whole... And oh yeah, the cruise liner is in space.
I was wondering if you're going to mention that. That's important. It was like very important plot point. Yeah.
It stars Hugh Laurie, Josh Gad. So many people are in this. It just looks interesting. And based off of what I've seen from Armando Iannucci, that's what I really want to see is his brand of people just being complete dicks to one another.
Yeah. That's what it is. I watched the premiere, and definitely it's about complete dicks and incompetence. A lot of incompetence. And how they get stranded in space, and they're off course, and hey, guys, it's going to be 3 weeks. Guess we're going to be 3 years now. Whoops. You know, it's interesting. And yes, serialized. It's a serialized comedy. It's a half-hour comedy. It's actually really it's good though. It's smart. Hugh Laurie is great. There's a great bit about his accent. I won't tell you what it is, but man, when he does it, it's really funny. It's just really funny.
Yeah.
All I got to say is I really hope Josh Gad doesn't visit the set of his TV show because he might be ruined his experience.
Yeah, he's a Nimrod. He's a Nimrod. Did you hear about that, John?
Yeah, I heard.
He's so sad about it.
And for people that don't know, he got invited to he was on talk show circuits promoting this show. And he told a story about how he got invited to Star Wars because he's friends with Daisy Ridley. And he was kind of mad because it spoiled a major scene for him. And it's just like, nobody hearing you speak is sympathetic to your plight.
Right.
What a sad time. You got to go to the set of Star Wars during filming. You know,
of all the saggy, amorphous blob of men to make it in Hollywood, why does it have to be him? Why couldn't it be me?
Exactly. I'm with you 150%. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, I am not the biggest Josh Gad fan. I kind of feel like he plays the same guy in everything, and he plays the same guy here. But thankfully, Hugh Laurie's in it, so that's good.
Right.
I do like him.
Yeah, he's great.
All right, this is also one of these TBAs, whatever the hell that means, for Disney Plus, whatever that channel is. I also call that channel the "This show better be good or I'm canceling it soon," and that's Falcon and the Winter Soldier, because I haven't watched shit on it since the end of Mandalorian, and I'm still not really saying that Mandalorian's great. Anywho, this is going to be following the adventures of Falcon and Winter Soldier and when they fight against villains. Like, Baron Zemo is going to show up as the only thing they have really leaked out there. And you know what? I really want to see a buddy cop comedy with these two in it, because they were some of the most fun in when they finally brought these two characters together in Civil War and and whatever else came after that.
Infinity War and biggest movies of the last couple of years. I get how you could forget.
It was fun watching these two interact, and I'm excited to see what they do moving forward.
I hope, if anybody's listening, John, obviously, he's just forgetting stuff this week. Don't blame him. Come back next week. He's usually very attainable of memory. He can remember lots of stuff.
I'm sundowning a little bit.
So funny. I'm excited about that. I do agree Disney Plus needs to start throwing out more stuff, because there's a whole lot of hype for a channel that has not much in terms of original content, really, compared to everything else.
But tell us all how much you love Togo.
I will when we get to recommendations, because I really did love Togo.
All right. And finally, of my list of movies, it's Perry Mason. This is also TBD, TBA, TBD, whatever, TBD determined.
To be announced, all those.
Oh, any of those things. HBO, it's going to be one of those things. And Perry Mason, it's going to be a noir kind of detective law thriller. Stars Matthew Rhys. People who were fans of The Americans will know him from there. It takes place in 1932 Los Angeles. And it looks really interesting. It looks like it's going to be really like a different take on Perry Mason, though. I think we all need.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds interesting. Looks promising.
I love Perry Mason.
Oh my God, you sounded so fake right now.
Did I? I meant that genuinely.
It didn't feel genuine.
Oh, I'm sorry. Should I redo that?
That was so phoned in. No, we're going to leave it in because we can make fun of you. That was so phoned in.
It wasn't.
That was like you trying to sell us on the idea that you liked Lady in the Water for a second.
No, you're right. You're right, Amanda. That was so genuine.
Oh, I'm sorry. I really did mean it.
I believe you. I love Perry Mason. It's one of my favorite TV shows of all time. It would be in my top 10, probably top 20, definitely, of TV shows of all time. It's just one that I love and I used to watch every week. They're going a different route with it a little bit. Robert Downey Jr. was originally going to be Perry Mason. Now he's just producing it. And I would have loved to have seen his Perry Mason, but I am really, really excited. I hope there's a Della Street in here too, so.
Oh, I forgot to mention that Tatiana Maslany is actually starring.
Heck yeah. Did you say John Lithgow's in it too?
No, he didn't.
Because
I did not.
That's a good one. That's partly what sold me.
Okay. Is he in it then? I didn't know that John Lithgow was in it. See, I'm just getting more sold and more sold and more sold.
And Tatiana is also really great. So the casting is stacked. And you guys know, I mean, Matthew, so he's talented too.
They're all talented.
Yeah.
Is that it, John?
Yeah, that's it for me.
All right. We do want to give a quick mention. There are a lot of sequel series in 2020 as well. Picard, The Haunting of Bly Manor, American Crime Story, Impeachment, and Penny Dreadful, City of Angels. We didn't quite count them as new shows, which we're only going to do new shows for this, because that's kind of a sequel series. I don't know if it counts, but we're mentioning them. There you go. Picard, I think, it comes out this week. Starts this week.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are stoked for that.
Those boomers who have CBS can enjoy it.
Yeah. All 47 of them can enjoy it. They're putting a lot of cool shows on that channel for something that we think nobody's watching. So obviously a lot of people are paying for that.
Yeah.
All right. February 7th on Netflix, Lock and Key, based on the comics from Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez. It's a coming-of-age mystery about the unbreakable bonds of family, and it follows the Lock siblings and their mother, who move into this ancestral home, Key House. And after their family patriarch is gruesomely murdered under mysterious circumstances, they discover that this house is full of magical keys, and they explore their unique powers, which, of course, awakens a demon that will stop at nothing to get what it wants.
Ooh.
Sounds great.
Say it slower next time, Daddy.
Oh, my God.
Get what it wants. Mm. Yeah, it's a great art. It's a great comic. It's a great story. So I'm really excited for that.
Yeah, I'm really excited too. And the imagery that we get out of the trailer was just phenomenal. I'm so for this.
Right. One that I don't know if I'm excited about, but I am extremely intrigued in, is Hunters on February 21st on Amazon Prime. With the rumored rise of the Fourth Reich in late 1970s New York City, a ragtag band of vigilantes is tasked with taking down the no-good Nazis before they can reorganize. Stars Al Pacino, and it's from Jordan Peele, and also inspired by true events. I'm sorry, Amanda. It's from the greatest living director, Jordan Peele.
That's not what I said!
The auteur, Jordan Peele, who apparently is making a lot of TV right now.
Good for him.
Are you?
This looks amazing to
does
me.
It really look amazing? Why does it look amazing?
I was talking about how much I enjoy things that are taking a different look at history or look at a story and making it its own thing. This story looks like it's something that's going to be fun and exciting. They put it in a time period in which they don't have the benefit of the internet or phones to work at their basic, you know, needs. So it's going to be a lot. To me, it looks a lot more like Mission Impossible from the 1970s, and only with the sensibility of today. And that actually spells to be like a really great kind of action-y, detective-y kind of spy thriller that I think would be fun.
You know, I want to mention the show that Jen was talking about at the very beginning was Falling Skies. I remembered now out of my head.
Yeah.
There we go. Falling Skies. That was the alien one he was talking about. All right.
That's the one, Falling Skies.
Moving on. Lovecraft Country on HBO. They don't have a date yet. The story of a young man on a road trip across 1950s Jim Crow territory, where he and his companions have to fight to survive the times, both the racist terrors of white America and the terrifying monsters that could be ripped from H.P. Lovecraft paper book. From any late H.P. Lovecraft paper book. The series has J.J. Abrams co-producing it alongside the greatest living director ever, Jordan Peele.
Jesus. It's never going to end.
I'm pretty sure that's what you said.
But he...
I'm pretty sure that it is what you said.
That is not what I said. I said he was great. I didn't say he was the greatest ever still alive. But this does sound really interesting, and I'm looking forward to it. Even though it feels like it's not normally up my alley... because of the setting, but the story itself appeals to me. So
well, yeah, I mean, you throw the greatest director in history into the background.
You throw the horror element into it, and I'm interested. Back it up, buddy.
What do you have against the Jim Crow era with the greatest director in history?
Oh, my gosh.
All right, Station 11 is my next one. HBO Max. We don't know the date for that yet. But the story takes place in the wake of a pandemic that wiped out most of the world's population. But instead of this Mad Max-esque wasteland, you follow this group of actors and musicians known as the Traveling Symphony, who travel around the Great Lakes region, entertaining small communities they find along the way, and then things take a turn. Dun, dun, dun.
And it has Himesh Patel, so that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's going to be interesting, and I'm curious where it goes.
Isn't it limited too, so this is like even more appealing to you because it's like smaller episodes and it's a limited series.
I don't trust limited anymore. I don't
really
stop size shaming him.
Big Little Lies was a limited series, got another season. Unbelievable was a limited series, but they're talking about another season. So I don't trust limited series. If it catches on, it'll catch on.
Fair.
Well, Unbelievable was supposed to be a limited series, but one of the reasons why they're talking about bringing it back was because Merritt Weaver and What's-Her-Face were just so great together. Yeah. I still haven't seen it, so.
What? Really?
You made it through Hannah. But you couldn't make it through Unbelievable.
Who are you?
I had Hannah scars. What do you mean make it through? I hadn't even started it yet.
I'm just saying at some point you went through Hannah, you make the same time allotment, and you get through Unbelievable, which is a fantastic series.
It's a fantastic series.
Feel like you do.
Whenever I watch something, I'm like, how much heavy lifting is required here?
Okay. Lastly, Why the Last Man? It's going to be an FX. We don't know the date yet. It's from comics and writer Brian K. Vaughan. It's the story of Yorick, a lone man who survives a pandemic that wipes out every mammal with a Y chromosome except for him and his helper monkey, Ampersand. It's breathtaking in its scope and it's pointed in its social commentary. The series had a really rough time making it to the screen. A lot of film adaptations they talked about that never happened. So this show is actually, I think the showrunners changed as well. So, I mean, there's been a lot of behind-the-scenes motion, but it's finally coming out this year, Why the Last Man, and I'm really excited for that.
I can't imagine that there was a single year in the 2010s where Why the Last Man wasn't brought up.
Agreed. Yeah, everybody wanted to do it. Nobody could figure out how to do it right, is apparently what the issue was.
What an interesting concept.
It's really smart. If you go look into it, read up on it. It's a very smart concept. I really hope they deliver. I don't trust anything until it actually comes out anymore. That's my five. That's it.
Those are good. We all have some good ones.
We've each got a couple listener comments and thoughts on what they want to see from TV in 2020. Amanda, you go first.
Jessica Farrell says, one, an Asian bachelor and bachelorette. Not one, or not just one. She wants them both.
Okay. I think at the same time.
Maybe.
Just throwing roses everywhere.
Two, more shortish-ish shows like Dracula, which was a great show.
Didn't watch it. I'm done with vampires.
I got the first episode in, but I didn't get beyond that.
I'm done with vampires.
Number three, less TV shows that are required viewing for movies, aka what Marvel is doing. I co-sign that.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's really a fan of that. We'll see how that plays out this year, though.
Four, more female-produced written television. I'm particularly impressed with Reese Witherspoon right now. And who doesn't want more Amy Sherman-Palladino and Phoebe Waller-Bridge? Cosign.
Agreed.
I'll take every bit of Phoebe Waller-Bridge that I can take.
Right? She's hilarious and adorable. And her and Jennifer Lopez meeting she just seems so sweet. Phoebe Waller-Bridge does.
She's better than I am because I'd just be on the floor drooling and telling her. It looked like Roger Rabbit.
And then my second listener comment is from Ty Nelson, and he says three things. Apparently, listicles are really popular in our comments.
What the hell is this, man? We said, what do you want most from 2020 TV? I got 12 things here. I got a list here. Why don't you sit down? I got some things.
Yeah, talk about wanting shorter things lately.
Ooh, burn.
Oh, boy. Number one, more limited series like Watchmen, Tell Your Story and Walk Away. Don't fluff, don't stretch, don't waste our time, go out on top.
And ignore Adrian Veidt.
The fluffers never end on top.
Did you hear Aaron?
Yeah, he heard me. He didn't care.
Number two, streaming services to continue creating original content. The stuff the networks or cable channels would shy away from. Give it a season and see how it does.
Okay.
Number three, keep the content coming. There's room for it all. Viewers should watch what they're interested in, but not feel like they need to watch it all. The more content that airs, the more voices are heard. Some stick, some don't, but give it all a chance. I like that message.
Yeah, it's not helping me, Ty. I'm overwhelmed. Okay? I'm overwhelmed. I have anxiety from television. John, what do you got? Listener comments.
I got two. Let's see. And I found the two shortest ones possible because that's just how I roll.
We all know how you read. Absolutely.
Tracy Cook Heinrichs says, two of my favorite shows are ending this year, Modern Family and The Good Place. So I hope everything, I hope they end on a good note.
That's good. So she, and what she wants from TV in 2020 is a good ending for those shows, basically.
Yeah, you know, it is fair. It's fair. Like Modern Family, I know a lot of people who are still watching that and they say that they feel like that that's their family or they're part of that family. Mm. And to want them to have a good ending is fair. And The Good Place is it's not one of those shows that for to want that to have a good ending is also fair just because it's so smart and so well done.
And so far, it seems like we are going to be getting that great ending that we're hoping for because they really are wrapping it up in a great way and knowing when to stop the story. And that's pretty amazing when creative writers do that.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And then Stefan Smidebeck says, I want something similar to X-Files. You and me both.
Yeah, we haven't had something like that in a little while. So yeah, I would agree. I would love to see, but you got, it's the partnership. It all starts with the partnership, then work at the stories out, you know?
I would put up with something that's more episodic for the part, just to build the partnership up and then to develop something that's more serialized after that.
You know what I did love about how they did serialized is you had self-contained episodes and Mythology was always one episode. And then 4 episodes later or 10 episodes later, like it was never part of every episode for the right. most part, which made it a lot more enjoyable for somebody like me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
All right, I've got 2 listener comments. One's Josh Stima. I would personally love to see more anthology series. It's awesome to be able to hop on, watch an episode or two, and move along. I always appreciate not having to have season upon season of lore and backstory to be well-versed in. I absolutely love Black Mirror, Into the Dark, and love Death and Robots because they scratch that itch to see a compelling story told without falling down the rabbit hole of binging an entire season to see a respective story arc concluded. Agreed.
Yeah, and those are great specific shows to pinpoint. Those ones were a lot of fun.
Yeah, I always feel bad for Into the Dark. It kind of gets shortchanged. Not enough people really talk about it. But
mm-hmm. Agree.
You get a movie for every freaking month, man. A horror movie for every month. It's great.
And they're so different. I don't feel like I'm rewatching the same concept, and they're super unique.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
more people should watch that. And we've got one from Curtis Renwick. Sophisticated stories with fully developed real characters. No more simple stereotypes. No uptight moms, stupid fumbling dads, etc., etc. British TV has figured this out. Stories that move at a good pace. Short form TV has really pushed this. Maybe too far at times. Network TV tends to drag stories out. Agreed. I like period stories too. Oh, yeah, there aren't that many of those, but I'm sure with Little Women being a hit, there'll probably be a few more. Loren Thomas Williams, he says, more shows featuring diverse casts. It's honestly appalling when one or two of the quote-unquote worthy black shows takes a break. There isn't anything to substitute or fall in line. Progress is happening, but more needs to be done. Also, I hope these Marvel shows live up to the hype. You know what's funny? I had this, my wife's Hispanic, I've talked about that before, and I've had this conversation, and John's Hispanic, so there you go. We covered, got a Hispanic friend, got a Hispanic wife, got the bases covered.
Do I need to point out how problematic you're being right at the moment?
Yes.
I think he gets it.
I should probably stop talking. When you're Caucasian, you don't notice it as much unless you're sitting with someone of color and you're watching and you realize like all the shows you watch, nobody looks like them. Nobody. And I've really started trying to pay more attention to it because diversity has been in the conversation and whatnot. And we watch a lot of TV together. And it's really amazing to me how many shows, in fact, almost every show I watch is predominantly white leads. The minorities are always in the background. So he's not wrong when he's saying like the worthy black shows. There aren't that many. There really aren't. Unless you're on a specific BET channel or something. So there's a legitimate argument. And I do believe that's where you change. People are talking about there weren't enough people of color nominated for Oscars and awards this season. You have to change the hiring. It's not about the awards. The awards should honor the art. You don't give awards to anyone. You base it on the art. But to get to the art, you have to hire people. And I think that's a worthy endeavor. There is a lot more people that should be represented.
And to go along with that, because I agree with everything you're saying, it's beyond even just the hiring. It's create films and works that represent different cultures. Like even beyond just the skin color diversity, culture is not represented differently. It's very much here is the standard, here's the norm. And so we need writers to develop stories that are different or are adaptable and showcase the different lives of those who are diverse, not just white. And then it comes into the next step, which is the hiring. And Aaron has a great point that it's a part of it is that there are really great roles that are more diverse that don't get nominations or don't win the awards. But to be able to have more in those categories, more competition of diversity, there needs to be more individuals that are hired for that. And that needs to be a priority for us, not just the award shows.
And not just about issues. This is my wife's quote. I get tired of watching shows where people look like me and it's all about immigration. You know, I want to watch shows, you know, like the shows she loves and just see people that look like her. And it's a true point. I really hate how the one minority in the show doesn't want to say
I know,
anything.
Right?
It makes me feel like everything I said is going to get our show canceled, John. So I appreciate that.
Well, I don't feel like I really need to add to anything you're saying. You know, what you're all saying is something that's powerful and strong, and people should feel that way. I wish you guys didn't feel like you had to say it in the sense of, I know such and such people of color, so I can say this, or that I understand this. It should just be something where you say, you know what, I feel this way, it should be this way, and I need to say it because it has to be this way. Because you undermine the whole sentiment by saying, because of the people I know, I feel like this should be it.
Well, I was saying that as a, you know, people always say, well, I've got a black friend, so I can say this and that. And it was meant as a joke, but you're right, I said it wrong, and now I feel bad.
Well, I don't even mean to say, you know, make you feel bad about it, because as a person of color or not, you know, it's hard to tell with me because I do have fair skin, I do have blue eyes, and I do mix in pretty well with the rest of the Caucasian people out there. Actually, my last name hides me in the crowd too. So you can say that I've lived a rather privileged life as a person of Hispanic descent, and or, you know, and people don't really notice it too much. And so I've been able to appreciate that I get to watch TV and the people that I see, I you know what, maybe more fat people need to be on TV than, because that's all I ever really been concerned about. Or people who, when they speak in a Latin accent, it actually needs to sound like a Latin accent, not some strange like newscaster Latin accent. That's kind of drives me nuts too. So I don't know what to tell you. I really appreciate what you guys are saying. I feel the way you do in a lot of ways. I try to have those feelings in a sense that I don't need to justify them, and I don't think anyone needs to have to justify the feelings for an inequality out there.
Absolutely. 100%. You do not have to, just because you are not of that nationality or anything else, let me talk.
I'm going to do you a favor and say this is where John should probably just end the floor, but okay.
Whatever. Then I'll stop talking. What I was going to add to it, though, is it's for a lot of people who live in privilege, you don't become, quote unquote, woke until somebody wakes you. For a lot of people, it takes knowing individuals or seeing those circumstances for it to really affect you, even though it should affect you no matter what, because we're, you know, like, you should be standing up for people who can't stand up for themselves. And sometimes, sadly, it does take that. But John makes a great point, and I agree that we all have to be conscious and aware of the way that we're standing up for other individuals and not saying it's because of this reason, it's because we care.
I only noticed it recently because when we watch so much TV, especially on vacation, we watch so much TV, and I just noticed that we were watching so many different shows and all the leads were white. They were all white. And when I'm sitting next to, and it's not because I really didn't mean it to sound like that, John, but when I'm sitting next to my wife, who is Hispanic and does look Hispanic, she's not like John. She's not a poser. She legit looks who she is. It's more glaring to me because it's right there in front of me, you know, and we had a conversation about it. So therefore it stood out for me. But Amanda and I should just both stop talking because John did a great job and we continued on. And we shouldn't have. God damn it.
You know what? We can end on John did a great job. I mean, that's... I've been alive for, 43 years. I never hear that.
John, you always do a great job.
I mean, I don't know about always.
Let's back that truck up. Not always. Nobody always does a great... You know what? There's no participation ribbons at the hoe. There's just not.
Look, I just want to say that I still would love to live up to the mediocrity of...
Bradley Cooper. You can't even remember his name.
No, I'm telling you the truth right now. I'm sundowning like crazy. It's nuts.
That's funny. All right. Any recent recommendations or before we close out?
I have a couple.
Okay.
Go for it.
So two of them are films that have already been out for a while, but I just caught up with them. The Laundromat.
You want to recommend Street. That? That movie was awful.
No, I liked it.
No, you're wrong. I'm correcting you. That movie was awful. That was Lady in the Water awful, but continue.
No, I liked it. The other one, which has a funny story attached to it, Autopsy of Jane Doe. That's Aaron really probably knows better than Johnny, because I've seen more horror films with him, I don't really get super scared by movies. And for whatever reason, I don't know if I just didn't know what I was getting into, like what I should have expected or what. There was a moment where I literally jumped out of my seat on the couch and screamed. And I did not anticipate it. I don't know why it happened. I was not scared the rest of the movie. I was fine. But wow, what an experience.
That's a really good movie.
It was really good. I'm glad I listened to people to watch it. And
yeah, it is a really good one. I liked it a lot, too.
The Aaron Hernandez documentary, I'm sure Aaron wants to talk about, too.
No, I mean, you go ahead.
Well, I love that we're able to look at the genuine facts of a case, but also, without excusing his behavior, look at the contributing, influencing environmental factors that could have put somebody in a position that led to the actions that they pursued. And to me, that was a really beautiful way to intertwine crime and psychology and understanding the ramifications of CTE, which not enough people have been considering and has been a plight for many people who really love the sport of football, but have a hard time with the lack of concern that it does to individuals who are playing the sport, and how it can so negatively affect their entire life and their mental capacity. And so I was really happy with this documentary. It was really sad. I learned a lot of things about this man that I had no idea about. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel they excused his behavior by making you aware of the science behind it.
I don't think so either. In fact, I don't think they answered the question. They just gave you all the information they had and also explained what it's like. You know, because I had some people, you want to go through the revelations on your own. There are a couple of revelations where they have former players or they have other people that are involved in the documentary that weren't really close friends with him, that are just kind of explaining how it is to be a certain way in that particular environment. And that was important, I think, just to understand it for people.
Yeah.
You don't get it unless, you know, that toxic masculinity, you don't get it necessarily unless somebody's there to explain it. I think they did a really good job of that. So it's a really good documentary, Inside the Killer Inside, or Inside the Mind of Aaron Hernandez on Netflix, right? That was really good.
Yeah. No, that was really good. I really did love watching that.
Oh, too. Did you finish it?
Really great. Oh, I finished it.
Oh, good.
You know what messed me up the most is like, is there anything you need? I mean, you're in jail for murdering two people. Is there anything you need? My Harry Potter book. I was just like, what? This guy is just all about, I really love my Harry Potter books. You make sure you bring them to me. What?
You learn a lot. Even about what he does later. I mean, and why he does it. It's just, wow, man, there's a lot of interesting
stuff.
Very
eye-opening. And they share the experiences of the other individuals that were influenced, you know, whose lives were influenced by all of these circumstances. Mm-hmm.
Except Tom Brady.
And also, that lawyer. Oh, my God.
He's a great lawyer, right?
It's terrifying. I don't like it.
Oh, my God. He got Casey Anthony on.
I know. That's what, when I saw that underneath his name, I was like, no, get me out of here. I don't want to see this.
I'll never forget watching that verdict going, what a baller. Because she's basically just dangling the body. Just like, hey, it's my kid. I did it.
Jesus.
This is just insane. I want to recommend Killing Eve season 2. If you haven't watched Killing Eve, it's great. It's on Hulu. Jodie Comer just dominates every scene in that entire series, but season 2 even more so. So I definitely recommend that. The Outsider on HBO, I feel like when it's done, I'm hoping one of you two will finish it so we can talk about it in depth, because it's a really cool story, and it starts with Jason Bateman is assumed to have killed the child, but he's in two different places at the same time, so how could it be? And then the mystery kind of goes from there. It's enthralling. It's a great book. I'm really curious to see how the series will match it because a lot of the book has already been told. So I'm really fascinated to see how they wrap that up.
Sounds incredible.
The guy that I'm working on a comic book with at the moment that I'm doing a cover for, he's actually in the first two episodes as a cop.
Is he really?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
He's in the background in a couple scenes, and then he got one line in the most recent episode. He got one line.
I'm thinking whenever we do this thing where we talk about it, maybe your buddy should give us a little interview real quick. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I love how nonchalant John is about how he's putting together a comic book.
Well, I'm just doing a cover, and it's a great big deal, and it's a lot of fun, and people have seen the artwork. I've been putting it out there, and I'm really happy with it. It's a cover, and I'm thrilled with it. And that's not the more important part of the story. I wanted to give him mention him as being in that show as being important.
And we covered that, but we should be also excited for you, too.
All right. I appreciate it.
No, man, I like when you draw. It's pretty.
It's pretty.
It is pretty. It's all right.
Last recommendation, Togo, Disney Plus. It's a Disney original. It's about the dog that's not Balto, which means the dog that actually did most of the work that Balto gets credit for. And it's a really good movie. It's not one of those movies where, you know, the dog's going to die 15 minutes into it and you're super sad. It's about a little warrior that fought and fought and fought and has heart and has courage and doesn't quit. I mean, it's a great story for just people. It's like the Rocky of dog movies. And I really enjoyed it. Willem Dafoe's in it. And it's about him and his sled dogs trying to get serum for a virus back to his town and whatnot, and they have to go 260 some miles, I think it is, in the frozen tundra, and it's dangerous, it's life threatening, and the dog has the character to get it done. It's a beautiful story. It's a true story, and it doesn't get enough credit, and you should definitely watch Togo, Disney Plus. If you haven't seen it, watch it. It's a family film. You can watch it with your family.
Well, like I mentioned before, I've been watching Sex Education Season 2. I really love this show. The characters are great. The story is going in such an interesting direction this season, and it's something that's worth taking your time with. So that first episode really is kind of funny. It does some really interesting things with pants, and it's just hysterical. And every episode from that point on, really, just it still has the same sort of heart, same sort of emotion, same sort of like touching characters that you knew from the first season. So they're doing a really good job of it. My second recommendation, if we're going to call it that, somebody for Christmas got me a movie,
Crawl,
and it's Crawl,
yeah. Which
and I watched it this.
Hang
weekend.
On, let's preface. Let's give it a quick backstory. Crawl came out. It's about a woman who is trying to find, like, there's a hurricane and there are alligators all over, and she's trying to get her dad to safety. So she's going through the Florida water park that is known as Florida as the hurricane's going on and everything, and the alligators are trying to attack. And John refused to even watch it because he doesn't like the fact that Florida has crawl spaces in this movie. And he says that they don't have them. And I know I've seen them in Florida, but apparently he's never been to where they have them. And so he was adamantly against it. So that was a long way to say, John wouldn't see Crawl because of crawl spaces. That's legitimately his only complaint about not wanting to see the movie. So I bought it for him for Christmas. Continue.
All right. So much to my, you can take it as what you can leave it. I hated the goddamn movie. Oh my God, I hated it as soon as I got half an hour into it, I was like, this is going to be the longest whatever amount of time I have left in my life it's going to be. Like the chick talks about how she's got to go see her dad, and there's some they're trying to build so much emotion. My dad's trapped down there, and I don't know where he is. So let's go look for him. He's 2.5 hours away, which 2.5 hours away from wherever she is pretty much puts her in my goddamn backyard. So because she's going to the University of Florida, which, Nate Bruce, I can't believe you wanted to see a movie with a girl who goes into the University of Florida. For shame, Nate Bruce. I know what you oh, stupid freaking tomahawk thing. I get it. I don't understand how you like this movie. Anyhow, at one point she's trapped underneath the damn house and they're having this heart to heart moment and there's some super alligator strong alligator that busts right through wood, but the same goddamn alligator can't bust through a shower door. I don't understand how this movie works. And this girl gets bit so many times by an alligator. I don't know how she's not stabbing him in the eye with a stump. Like the sharp part of the stump from the leftover. Like, why isn't she not doing that? I kept on asking myself, this movie's going to be good, right? There's going to be like a giant alligator tornado that happens. Sort of. It's an alligator wave. It comes into the house and all these alligators are showing up because that's how alligators work. They're pack hunters all of a sudden. That's not how they work.
Drink every time John says the word alligator.
Wow. Well, I'm glad I got that for you for Christmas.
Merry Christmas to me.
Share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. Also on our site, thehollywoodoutsider.com. Subscribe to your preferred podcast app. Reviews do help the show. So rate us into our tirades right there in the app. And you can find John's artwork on Insta and everywhere else at rjohndraws, Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk, which is back, and me on The Blacklist Exposed and presenting Hitchcock as well as Smirk. Well, John, we could have used that as the whole teachable minute.
We could have.
You should have told me. I would have just let you have it. Because we're starting a new thing. You guys let us know what you think. But we're going to do a teachable minute every week. Like something that one of us learned from movies or television. And we're going to do it in less than a minute. Okay? So this week it's my turn. Here's what I learned this week. From Killing Eve, Season 2, I learned this really interesting tidbit that I researched and found there is complete validity to it. At one point, a character references that today, social media empires and tech companies have so much access to personal data, it renders the CIA, MI6, and other covert organizations who stock trade our secrets, they're essentially dinosaurs on the way to extinction. We have evolved from a world that can maintain a secret well enough to create these crazy conspiracy theories to a world that essentially shares everything, personal data, cameras in our homes, etc., for free. And it was just fascinating to me to learn that, oh, those organizations are really not as prominent or valuable as they used to be because we can get the same information, and tech companies especially can get that information now themselves.
I'm sorry, did you say sharing camera from the home?
Yep.
Yeah. That gets hacked all the time.
Camera on your phone can get hacked at any given moment.
See if I take it when I go pee next time.
I know people who actually have that little slider thing that goes over the camera so that you can't see anything. I know people who actually do that because that freaks them out, which in fairness, it does. In the industry that I actually do for my 9 to 5 job, I talk to people all the time who are like, I talk to my phone and I use it to do what you guys can do. And I'm like, you know, you really shouldn't be doing that because of this reason. And it's not really that, you know, it's a security risk to you. I don't think you know how this works. It's my phone, and my phone tells me everything I need to do, okay? You are wrong. Okay, fine. You can just go ahead and give away your secrets. That's cool.
We were literally texting, the three of us were texting earlier about Beyond Burgers and
right.
About vegan burgers, randomly just having a random conversation. Pull up my phone to go look on Facebook. Guess what all my ads were for? Mm-mm-mm.
Yeah, it wasn't even that we said it out loud or anything like that. It was just in the conversation. What a crazy life.
I talked to my wife a couple of weeks ago about the fact that I want to get LASIK done, and it shows up in my news feed no matter what. And that was a conversation I had outside away from, like, I wasn't on the phone call or anything, and all of a sudden LASIK ads are everywhere.
That's awesome. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this episode. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. What do you think? Whole teachable minute? Stay? Are we going to let the listeners?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay.
Also, I was going to say this earlier. For somebody who can land on all these DVD boxes for these great one-liners, all you had to say to John was, it's pretty.
Ha I don't know who you're trying to insult there. It sounds like me because I'm just so
It's me.
It's definitely Aaron.
She's saying because I got on the ICU DVD box, now available at stores near you.
Are you still recording this?
Yeah, I am. Buy it, bitches. My name's on it. Go to Amazon.com.
It's going to rain.
What? What just happened? I don't even know what just happened.
Oh my God, it's going to rain.